Dr. Richard Boylan, PhD type, is a behavioral scientist, anthropologist, university associate professor emeritus, certified clinical hypnotherapist, a consultant, and researcher. Ooh. His career has also spanned four decades as a service as a psychologist, social worker, a retired clergyman, educator, and space anthropologist. Dr. Boylan is a consultant to Star Kids and Star Seeds, seeking to understand their origin, identity, and mission. Author of three books, Close, Extraterrestrial Encounters, Labor Journey to the Stars, and Project Epiphany. He is also the president of the Academy of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists, a not-for-profit educational and research organization. Richard, when do you sleep, for crying out loud? You're everywhere.
Well, tonight it won't be till 2 in the morning. George, how are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. Good to, you know, and I met you at a conference about a year or so ago, right toward the end, and it was a pleasure doing that as well. Tell me, what have you been doing since we last talked a few years ago?
Well, I've been continuing to work with the Star Kids and Star Seed adults. For any listeners to whom those terms are not self-evident, let me say real quickly that these are people who've been transformed by connection with the star visitors. The two main ways people get transformed is either their parents are visited and some reproductive material is genetically upgraded, and when they are born, they are more advanced, brighter, have a double handfuls of psychic abilities, generally are more robust, and have a pretty strong cosmic awareness. And these kids and adults are now in very great numbers in society and are beginning to make an impact as we transform our society from the kind of scary one-world, new-world-order orientation that you've been talking about to take it in a new and healthier direction. And they're going to put a lot of muscle and brain power and even psychic abilities to that task. So we've been doing workshops and talks and meeting with kids and grown-ups and trying to raise consciousness. I've got a new book out since that listing got printed. Star Kids is the name of it, and it talks all about them. And, of course, writing that has consumed much of the last year.
Now, when you talk about there are many of these children on the planet, how many are we talking about, if you could estimate for us?
Well, yes, I've done some research sampling technique, and the results are, to put it mildly, astounding. Let me give you some global figures, because this is a worldwide phenomenon, and the numbers are just going to dazzle people. It's my estimate now that, you know, the UN tells us there's 6.3 billion humans alive today, and in my estimates, 59% of them are Star Kids or Star Seed adults. Now, that doesn't mean they're all awake yet. These many people know they're different. They feel different. They can't quite put their finger on it. They know they have unusual abilities that nobody talks about in the newspapers or on television. But in many cases, they are aware of contact, telepathic or in person with star visitors. But they're in the closet, or maybe they haven't even had contact, and they're just walking around knowing they're a little bit different but not clear why. But when all these people wake up as this phenomenon comes out in the open and starts to get on the broad general media, these people are going to really snap to and realize why they're different, why they're here, and really get mobilized to make a difference in our society.
Besides, how do they look, Richard, though? Do they look like human beings, or do they look a little different?
No, these kids and adults pretty much look like general humans. You wouldn't, in most cases, be able to pick them out of the population as looking much differently. They in some cases tend to have a little larger head development, particularly in the front or the top, and these are areas of intelligence and psychic dominance in the brain structure. Some of them have kind of a little bit different eye structure in terms of the iris. But mostly they do not look different on the outside. A couple of the physical telltale signs are very often they have lower body temperature than the average a regular human of your, you know, the old fever thermometer says should read 98.6 if you're
right.
Normal. These kids and starseed adults tend to read a degree or two lower.
Hmm.
I've had a physiologist tell me, actually, that's kind of good. It means you're not burning up as fast and you'll last longer. And indeed, many of these kids grow up fast as infants and small children, faster than their peers, but as they get to the other end of their lifespan, they tend to look younger than the folks around them their age that are aging, and they tend to last longer. So it seems like a good deal all in all.
Now, if your estimate is correct, Richard, 59% of the children and adults on this planet may be these star children, star adults. That means to me that this campaign has been going on for a long, long time, has it?
And let me say yes, and we'll talk a second about the length of that, but let me mention the other dimension of how star kids and star seeds happen besides the
genetic
gene splicing upgrading.
Yeah.
The other major, in fact, in my research with, I probably worked with 500 people now, I've had contact, and many star seed star kids, If anything, the more predominant way this happens is that an individual who was a star visitor, an extraterrestrial, if you will, in a previous lifetime comes in as a human this time, but brings along with them just enough kind of elevated consciousness and awareness and energy and extra abilities that they function at a higher level than a regular human would have. So the combination of these star visitor incarnates, if you will, that are now walking around as humans and humans who've been genetically upgraded does constitute the 59%. But because they often come in with no particular awareness from before, they have to be in most cases, reached out to and explained why they're different, and then everything clicks together and starts to make some sense, and they understand themselves.
How did this...
has been going on for... well, we can talk about isolated instances going back into the last century, but the real tidal wave of star kids started happening in the... 80s and 90s. By that I mean the percentages really got to be really astounding. We can talk in terms of, well, let me give you a little age breakout here.
All right.
I think it kind of makes the case for what's going on. If you take middle, young, mature adults, 30 to 45, about 45% of them are starseed adults.
Okay.
So that's back 30 years that there was a sizable percentage.
Mm-hmm.
You get down to the young adults, the 19 to 29 crowd, two-thirds of those are starseeds. You get down to the teenagers, 8 out of 10 are star kids. You get down to the kids who are infants to 12 years of age, 96% are star kids. So what we've got is a front-end loaded wave that the closer you get to the present, the higher percentage of people coming in and being born are star seeds or star kids. So while there were some back in the 50s and even before then, isolated individuals going back, Einstein was one, and Tesla, you know, going back even into the wraparound of the late 1800s. But the real wave is in the last few decades, and it has now created a majority of humanity in this column, if you will.
Is one select group of extraterrestrials responsible for this, or a number of them?
Well, it is a project of the Star Nations, which is the unified organization of all the intelligent civilizations in contact with Earth. They talk about a primary mission objective to Earth, which is to save Earth, which is headed to hell in a handbasket, as any environmental scientist will tell you, but also the species upon it, the plants, the animals, fish, birds, but very centrally the humans. You know, as fellow conscious intelligence beings, they hate to see a intelligent species blow itself up or destroy its ability to survive on a planet. So their focus is on trying to turn around this madcap race to hell in a handbasket that our current society and culture is on, between environmental degradation, violence, wars, weapons of mass destruction, and New World Order kind of repression and manipulating conflicts everywhere to maintain dominance. They want us to reach our highest and best potential, what the indigenous people of many cultures have called Fifth World, a place where humans live in peace and harmony with the Earth and with each other, and operate in a more family-like way instead of at each other's throats in a competitive, materialistic dominance paradigm that we find ourselves in currently. So they are here with both the incarnation incoming wave of volunteers volunteering to come as a human this time around, live a lifetime, and in terms of the genetic upgrading work. The heavy lifters in terms of the workforce are primarily the Zeta folks, but it's not a Zeta project. It's a whole Star Nation project. They're just the ones that are doing the intensive labor of most of the contacting and the gene splicing.
Richard, this Project SERPO, have you heard of it?
SERPO?
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
This is supposed to have been some kind of a basically trade program between astronauts and extraterrestrials that started in 1965 and lasted about 13 years. But they mentioned Zeta Reticuli. It's very similar, I think, to some of the things you've talked about. I'm wondering if there's definitively been that kind of relationship. But my question to you is how do you know this has been going on, this either genetic altering or this transformation?
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a database of 500 cases, and many of the other therapists I associate with who are in our association, the Society of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists, have reached the same conclusion through interviews with people, and in some cases by hypnotic regression, taking people back to encounter incidents, or even back to the beginning of their life and back to the in-between space between this life and a previous life. People have reported out being aware of previous existence on another planet as looking quite different than they do as a human now, and in many cases consciously recalling that they have been presented with the perilous Earth situation and consciously volunteered to come in and live a human life and try and help and make a contribution here.
What's the percent of the genetically altered humans to those that either come through via reincarnation or these other dimensions you were talking about? Is there a breakdown on that?
I don't have a firm figure. I can give you a kind of feel from dealing with many, many people and kind of making a rough estimate. I would say the majority of star seeds and star kids are through the incarnation route, being star visitors before and coming in as a human this time. A minority, but still a pretty hefty minority, are those that have their parents' reproductive material is genetically upgraded, and they come in genetically upgraded as a more fully developed human with these mental and psychic abilities and so forth.
How are they doing it, Richard, without the rest of the population, those people who haven't been affected, of them knowing about it? I mean, do they do it with craft and they beam people aboard? What's the procedure?
Well, ever so many of the encounters people have had have a dimension of the person being taken aboard a craft and their reproductive material worked with, this genetic gene splicing, I guess we would consider it, and then brought back, and when they go on to have a kid, they have a much more advanced kid. This is happening all over the world. The star visitors and the Zetas certainly have mastered the ability of low profile, coming in with cloak craft, picking usually quiet times of the night, 2 or 3 in the morning. Person isn't gone very long, and in many cases, there's a hypnotic suggestion they won't remember the encounter until later and better time when they're ready to deal with the information. And the star visitors, the state has been very busy over many, many years, and so there is a very generous sprinkling of these star seeds and star kids all over the planet. Of course, you get to a certain point, as you know, in genetics, where once this upgraded genome is installed in a person, if you will, they then are in a position to pass that on to their kids. The Zetas don't have to come back every generation and do splicing. The new upgraded version of humankind is passed on. It's George Robinson, a professor who gave the keynote talk at the When Cosmic Cultures Meet conference in Washington, D.C. in 1995 that I was at, really brought the room to a hush when he defined the new human that is emerging now. He coined a term which I really like. He called, instead of Homo sapiens sapiens, he said Homo alterius spatialis, meaning man that is different and space-oriented.
Stay with us, Richard. This is an incredible story. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Boylan, a couple weeks ago, you kicked up quite a stir on the internet with a report about some super secret 1960-ish type meetings, and I want you to explain that because it is a mind-boggling story.
It is indeed. I just about flipped when I got this information given to me, and it puts a lot of pieces of the puzzle together, and it also, I got it down to the level of detail, including who were at this meeting, some of the key people. And when you talk about New World Order, we begin to have some of the people ID'd and begin to see how far back it goes. Basically, there were two meetings that I'm going to talk about, one in 1961 and one in 1964. Both of these were meetings between representatives from four governments of Earth and representatives from the Star Nations, the High Council of the Star Nations, the governing body. Let's start with the 1961 preliminary meeting.
Okay.
After about 4 years of private contacts by Star Nation representatives with individual leaders of governments, the four governments being the United States, the Soviet Union, People's Republic of China and the Council of Europe. So from 57 to 61, Star Nations representatives made individual contacts with the leaders of these governments. And the point was to get together to create a joint meeting to get some policy agreements hammered out that would achieve a couple things that the Star Nations definitely wanted, which is to stop the attacks of these governments on Star Nation craft that were passing through the sky, and also to permit the Star Nations to continue their mission here, protective and transformative mission, without being attacked. President Dwight Eisenhower agreed to a preliminary meeting, and by 1960, the leaders of all four countries agreed that they would have representatives ready to go in December 12, 1961. The meeting place was London, the Duchess Palace, the Grand Ballroom. December 12, 1961, 26 representatives from the four Earth governments, of these particular governments, and three counselors from the Star Nations High Council, and along with a four-person Zeta security contingent and a recording secretary, if you will.
Now, let me ask you, what did they look like, these extraterrestrials, Richard? Because,
right.
I mean, could they just waltz into a hotel unnoticed?
Well, I don't think we're talking about waltzing in. This meeting was under extreme wraps, of course, and everybody who went there, I'm sure, was under high security and you know, the kind of thing where you pull in in a limo with darkened windows, and people don't know who's coming in and and assembling. I would imagine, given the security of this situation and the kind of security they had for the subsequent meeting, that the place was probably cleaned out for this meeting. The Star Nation counselor representatives were a tall Zeta, a praying mantis-type person, humanoid. In fact, a council representative for the praying mantis people, as we would call them. They kind of resemble a humanoid version of that insect, kind of tall, spindly figures, mm-hmm. large eyes, and a reptoid humanoid counselor representing the reptoid, reptilian, human contingent. These were not all the races, but, you know, just a representative handful of counselors who came to represent the Star Nations for the purpose of this particular meeting on Earth. And they met with these 26 representatives. If you wish, I can mention who some of the human figures that
sure.
people would recognize were there.
And you're going to have to tell us how you came across this information, because that, to me, is as equally important as the event itself. But go ahead.
Yes. Well, let me mention who some of the humans were, and then I'll indicate how I got hold of this information. the human representatives were as follows. President Dave Rockefeller headed the U.S. delegation. Apparently, he had leaned on President Eisenhower and gotten agreement that he would head the U.S. delegation. Newly elected President Kennedy was only in office a few months and was not fully briefed about the meeting, and while he didn't particularly care for the choice of people representing the U.S., he was so newly in and so left in the dark that he couldn't do much about it.
Right.
Representing the Council of Europe was international law professor Anthony Bradley, who also was a member of the Council of Europe. Representing the Soviet Union was Premier Nikita Khrushchev in person. And representing the Chinese government of Premier Mao Zedong was his most trusted confidant, his official representative, who they went to great difficulty not to divulge his name. Additional people present were Lawrence Rockefeller, David's brother, and Henry Kissinger, David's chief advisor. The British Queen Elizabeth II was there. Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands was there. E.H. van der Bugel, the Secretary General of the Bilderberg Council, a world policy planning group.
Oh, sure, yeah.
If you like New World Order, just listen in on one of their meetings.
Yeah, really.
Was there as well. The only white hat I could detect out of the people that are identified was someone who was an American but was picked by the Russian and Europeans to be a delegate to this meeting, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, the noted African-American scholar and civil rights activist, a Ph.D. from Harvard, and so forth. He was of quite a different stripe than the rest of the representatives there, who were pretty much under the thumb of the cabal, the New World Order types, if you will, that made sure that their men were pretty much who were the delegates there. But Du Bois was a different stripe. He wanted to bring education between the cultures, and what really got people hostile at him was that he wanted to go public about the fact that star nations were communicating with humans. He did not feel right that the people of the world didn't know about this meeting. But Rockefeller requested, in his gentle way, Du Bois not to speak about the meeting and told the other representatives they had better not speak about it as well.
Sounds like you obtained the minutes of the meeting, Richard.
Well, not quite.
We'll get to that, though.
The source for this, obviously, is not any of these four governments or anybody on Earth. This thing is beyond super secret classified. Nothing of this has ever come out before, although there are certain circumstantial evidence that dovetail with this very neatly. But the source is the Star Nations. They are the ones that provided this information and indicated it should become public.
Provided it to whom?
Me.
To you?
Me.
In what fashion did you obtain it? I mean, a direct package, or did it come in the mail from Zeta Reticuli? I mean, seriously, how did you get it?
Telepathic communication and assistance from some colleagues who also are in communication with the Star Nations to make sure that it is heard properly and fully.
And when did that happen?
It happened just a few days before I went public with this on March 17th.
Okay, so very, very recently.
Very recently. It took me, you know, several days to kind of put a cold compress to my head with this information. It is so mind-boggling. And I haven't even talked about the final meeting yet. But, just a handful of days before I put it on the Internet, did it come to me.
Okay, so this incredible group of people, they're meeting, and initially then the discussion is, you know, quit shooting at us. We've got a mission here. What kind of agreement did they all come to?
Well, that is the second meeting, which I guess I'll jump to now.
All right.
The first meeting was basically to set up the agenda and everybody hear what the other side wanted and go back on an individual basis, Star Nation representatives met with individual representatives on the between time. There's a three-year gap between the December 1261 preliminary meeting and the second meeting. Now, the second meeting took place on April 14th, 1964. The location was in the United States, in fact, in Texas, and to be more precise, in the Guadalupe Mountains that run along northwest Texas into the New Mexican border. To be more precise, pretty much underneath El Capitan Peak, the highest point in the Guadalupe Mountains, and to be more precise, about 15 levels down in a subterranean government installation there that nobody talks about. The Guadalupe Mountains National Park is perhaps the national park with the least reason to exist. In fact, even on one of the websites, they complain about there's nothing there when you go there. I think it was, as some government park properties are, designed to protect certain things within them, that whether there's any sagebrush or rabbits protected is purely secondary. In this case, the installation was there. So two people were not at the second meeting. W.B. Du Bois had died right before the second meeting happened under what the Star Nations tell me are suspicious circumstances. In fact, he was killed, I think, the day before the
That should have made the Star Nations group a little suspicious of the rest of the group they were dealing with.
Oh, they knew who they were dealing with. They knew these were a bunch of rascals. It was very distasteful to meet with this group, but they had no choice because their rules say they have to deal with who the humans put forward, and these were the four governments that were shooting at them, and the officials designated to speak for these governments, so they had to hold their nose and meet with them. The other person not there was Queen Elizabeth, who apparently didn't have a desire to attend the second meeting. Everyone else was there on both sides, the rest of the human representatives and the Star Nations representatives, and they achieved an agreement that give you the main elements of the, of course, from the Star Nation side, they wanted a ceasefire, and the four governments said, yeah, we'll stop shooting at you. And they wanted to get agreement that they could continue to go about contacting people, letting them know they're here. In the case of the ones that have incarnated, come in as humans, to let them know that they're not forgotten, and to kind of wake them up and remind them of their past and why they're here now. And in the case of genetic upgraded star kids and star seed adults, to interact with them and get them oriented to why they're here. The cabal infiltrated government representatives had something they wanted on their side, and they cut a pretty hard deal. They insisted that they be given advanced information on science, particularly in the arenas of energy, transportation, and biology. They wanted to get detailed information about the star visitors' craft, their UFOs, if you will, and their propulsion system. They wanted information about the energy signature of each of the star visitor races visiting Earth, because these cabal scientists had advanced abilities to detect differing energy patterns of different life forms and wanted to be able to ID these people from a distance. We now know, well, I've been told by the star visitors, they now can do it from quite a distance and tell when a star visitor is within our atmosphere and on Earth. They wanted information about, they wanted to restrict the altitudes UFOs could fly at unless they were on a pre-announced mission. And they wanted to tell, be told by the Star Nations who the Star Nations were visiting, and they wanted to They basically identify everyone who was an incarnate, been a star visitor in a previous existence, and a human this time around, and all the ones who've been genetically upgraded. They want all every one of those people ID'd. I can go into the reasons why they wanted that information and what use they made of it, but I imagine your imagination is already starting to run with this data.
Absolutely. Now, did the Star Nations approve that? Did they give them what the Earthlings wanted?
Yes, that was the price of the deal. And here is the thinking, the reasoning. The importance, because Earth was headed the way it has been going for destruction, self-destruction, both environmentally and socially, in terms of humankind's survivability, this became such an overarching, important priority that the Star Nations kind of held their nose and accepted very distasteful and unpleasant conditions as the price of being able to
help us
reach
out.
Earth and not get shot on the way down and not get interfered with when they wanted to make contact with people.
Richard, stay with us. We're already done with the first hour. We'll be back with you in just a moment. What an incredibly strange story. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Now, Richard, how many meetings did they have then? We talked about two. Did they have any more than that?
In terms of full meetings of everybody, there were the two.
At what meeting did they basically ratify everything? The second?
The second meeting is where the agreement was ratified and brought to conclusion. When we were talking last time, we talked about the elements of the deal on both sides. I can speak about what happened after they went their separate ways in terms of following through on the agreement, which in some ways is the rest of the story. The Star Nations kept their side of the agreement. They're honorable people and operate from very high metaphysical and spiritual principles. The same cannot be said of the four governments involved. There have been firings on Star Visitor craft from time to time, and one of the counselors said to me that the humans say, well, it was a mistake or a misidentification or human error. We didn't mean to do it, but of course, these happened and did. One of them was even captured by astronauts who were in orbit in a space shuttle where a neutral particle beam weapon beam comes up from the Earth towards a Star Visitor craft that's hovering at the edge of atmosphere, and it makes a radical right turn at the last moment.
Yeah.
And
I think we've seen that video.
Yeah, a lot of people have seen that. You know, that's just documentation that the deal was violated and that they've continued to fire on them. There, of course, have been various reports of downed UFOs since the 60s, and those were no accidents. It was deliberate shootings because these cabal-type folks want to grab these vehicles and tear them apart and back engineer them and find out what makes them tick and take that technology and reproduce it so that they can have advanced weapon systems to rule the world with. They've continued to ambush and kidnap and interrogate and torture star beings when they capture them from shot down craft or in some cases using energy signature detection. Intercept them on the ground on the way to interact with a human. They've misused the flight altitude restrictions on Star Nations craft to continue the UFO cover-up for decades, and because the UFOs were generally required to fly very high in the sky, the government has said, well, all you saw up there was ice crystals or inversion layers or migratory geese. The technology and science information that the Star Nation shared was appropriated by cabal scientists and taken to their labs and re-engineered into things like psychotronic mind-influencing weapons, using some of the advanced physics and energy information to create scalar energy artificial earthquake devices.
Richard, weren't we concerned that they were going to blow us up if we were trying to shoot down their craft? I mean, they must have had weaponry and technology far superior to ours.
Yes, but what the four governments came to understand is that the Star Nations are very strictly ethically bound by the 11 universal laws and the 11 spiritual laws of the cosmos. And these principles do not allow them to be anything but truthful and honorable, and when they give their word, they follow it through, and they're not going to get down in the gutter and play at the level of the cabal just because that's the level the cabal's playing at. And so there was a kind of a mismatch ethically between one side and the other in this. They went on to do things like misusing the genetic samples that these various Star Nation races had to give them to do gene splicing and cloning of hybrid human super soldier clones. My friend Dr. Michael Wolf, before his death, told me about that. He was in that project for a while before he figured out what the Army was really trying to do and washed his hands of it.
Yeah, it really plagued him, didn't it, once he found out what was happening.
Yeah, when people see that that recent movie out about clone super soldiers, that's Hollywood imitating reality. This project did take place. They've misused the information about which humans were being visited so that they could follow up on this whenever a star visitor visited a human with a rogue cabal paramilitary unit that would kidnap these people, drug them, interrogate them, abuse them, and then hypnotize them to have a false memory that all the bad things that happened to them were done by evil aliens. So these people end up scratching their heads saying, I remember some good contacts, but it looks like something bad happened the other night, and it was really humans using drugs and hypnosis to mess their heads up so that they would begin to fear and avoid star visitor contact.
Now, the primary mission, Richard, by these Star Nations, of course, was what? One of being benevolent. They wanted to help planet Earth by genetically altering and also doing the reincarnation work?
Well, that's part of it. They see Earth itself as a living being, a somewhat sacred being, if you will, in the kind of Native American consciousness way, as a precious life form that cannot ethically be ignored or allowed to go become trashed. Some of our own scientists, like James Loveland, are beginning to talk about the same thing, the Gaia theory, that Earth is a conscious web of living systems that operates under a high unitary principle, and we are just part of that. That the Star Nations certainly share that kind of consciousness, and therefore, in their view, a planet is a terrible thing to waste, and didn't want to see Earth trashed by its allegedly intelligent inhabitants. But beyond that, they were concerned about all the other species, plants and animals, and uppermost humans, because we are highest in the intelligent and spiritual order.
At least
among
we're supposed to be.
And supposed to be. And so their mission was to work with humans to get humans mobilized. And they spend many of their communication hours with people on environmental lectures about, reversing the damage we're doing to the Earth. But also, in terms of human-to-human contact, that we need to change our priorities, not let materialism guide us, not being such a competitive, aggressive society, being more concerned about our fellow humans and not sitting by idly while people somewhere else in the world starve to death, that we, you know, start to treat each other like family. And they wanted to help our society reach its potential as an intelligent, spiritual, high-minded, metaphysically aware, psychically endowed society operating at its highest and best potential. They have said that they've made a kind of special exception for Earth. They've seen many, many planetary civilizations over the history of the star nations, and Earth is at a very dire straits right now. And normally, they, when they see a society that's as taken over by the bad guys, the cabal, the shadow government, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it, as our Earth society is, where the bad guys are have control of government, media, finances, all the basic power structures, they just say, well, you know, too far gone, move on to something that can be saved. But they've made an exception because they see us at a very delicate teeter-totter and that there's potential to turn it around. That's why they poured this effort in. And to kind of jump to something I've gotten as a kind of update since the original communication, they now believe that we can make it, that we will be able to correct the division in society between those who are ego-oriented and those who are oriented towards respect for Source, God, and, you know, the sacred in nature, whatever you want to call it.
Hey, Richard, tell me about the your clinical close encounter therapist group, because I think that's important to distinguish these other people who've been working with you on this project. Because, you know, I've got a camp of people out here that think, oh, my God, this guy's off his rocker. I want you to elaborate a little bit more on the group and the telepathy that you say came to you.
Yeah. Well, the Academy of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists were not the group principally involved in this telepathic communication. It was another set of individuals that I've worked with on in the last year, and corroborated by my associate Marion McNeil and the star visitor she works with, and corroborated by Chief Golden Eagle, the keeper of the star traditions for the Yankton Sioux, Dakota Sioux. So I have multiple sources, if you will, that corroborate that this information is correct. It's not just a single source. But for those who are very materialistic and physical oriented, and, you know, don't believe anything unless they have some videotape, it's a little hard to videotape telepathic incoming communication.
Sure, but you can understand how people will hear this and go,
absolutely. And you know, a year ago, if you told me I was going to be getting this kind of communication at this level of material, I'd have been dumbfounded and dubious myself. But you have to be inside it and start to get some corroboration. I've also had an Army intelligence retired officer tell me that I've got it right, too. So I've got multiple sources that this stuff isn't just, you know, somebody had too many beans for dinner. But I can appreciate for people who are used to a very physical scientific, in that quotation mark sense of the word, that this is a little hard for them to accept as an authentic stream of knowing. But it is here, and I think as people begin to see what's happening in our society over the time ahead, it will become more corroborated by the flow of events. I'd like to move a little ahead to a couple of important updates that have come in the last several days. A week ago, I got an update from the counselor for the Watchers, one of the principal Star Nation High Council spokespersons who presents this information, and he indicated that Star Nations now view the 1964 agreement as invalid.
Why?
Well, I made the case that according to the international law, on three bases, that this agreement is invalid. First basis is a doctrine called Ultra Vires, meaning these the people who entered into the agreement were not really legitimate. I argue that USSR and China were police states, and there were not free elections. That David Rockefeller was never elected and was not in a position to officially speak for the American people.
Well, why didn't they go straight to the United Nations, Richard?
Well, at this point, this was not anything more than a stopgap, an attempt to get a ceasefire, basically. And they needed to get more of the primary mission accomplished of reaching people and raising consciousness. They weren't ready to do the ta-da bit, land on the White House lawn, or show up at the UN for a formal worldwide meeting of cultures. They just wanted to get a ceasefire while they finished, over the last 42 years, they're getting enough of their primary mission done that there's a whole generation of conscious people rising up now and growing up among us. That was uppermost. So they just dealt with the four governments that were doing the shooting and cut a deal with them to get them to turn off the weapons so that they could get their mission accomplished. The other reasons are misunderstanding and fraud. If you enter agreement and you've got your fingers crossed, and it's very clear that as soon as the agreement is over, the governments, including the United States, continue to fire on vehicles when they felt like it. There's another international law, legal doctrine of peremptory norms, that an agreement's null and void if there's a violation of basic human right norms, and certainly intending to use the information on starseed incarnates and human star kids, starseed hybrids, to misuse that information to identify them, reach them, and terrorize them, harm their rights, invalidates this. So on all these bases, they feel the agreement is invalid. And a fourth reason they gave is that the governments that cut the deal no longer exist. Mao, China is totally different now. The USSR is no more. The Council of Europe has been replaced by the European Union on a practical basis. And the era of Eisenhower and Lyndon Johnson's U.S. is a far cry from where we are today.
Well, if they're going to negate the agreement, though, Richard, what does this then mean for us? I mean, are they going to continue doing what they're doing, the genetic altering and the educating of those that they believe have already come here through reincarnation? Or are we in the midst of a war with them? What's going to happen?
No. There's a stopgap approach by the Star Nations, even though they now deem that the agreement is invalid. They're going to breach the gap by continuing to inform the major organizations about important information like their flight routes so that there won't be a collision between a UFO and a human airplane or spacecraft. And they will continue other things like the defense of Earth and communication and information sharing. And the difference, however, is since a September 29th formal hearing where circumstances permitted a fresh hearing out of the evidence that the cabal, the shadow government, if you will, has been engaged in a long series of criminal and unethical behavior, the Star Nations have now reached the conclusion that they are ethically allowed to no longer deal with these people. Before that, they felt that they could not discriminate. All Earthlings had to be treated equally. But now, having found these to be career criminals, they are now feel they're ethically free to discriminate against them. They've cut off any further contact, no more communication, no more information sharing. And any government or organization that they normally communicate with, they say, you clean those people out before we talk to you.
Well, Richard, sounds like it could be war. We'll be back in a moment because I want to see if we, as a world, continue to plan then to shoot down the craft. We'll be back. We're going to open up the phone lines with Richard Boylan at the top of the hour. Richard, I am concerned, though, that if this is happening and if they have basically negated the deal, what's going to prohibit some of these world leaders to pull out their arsenal and start shooting again at these craft?
Well, they've been doing it intermittently all along, so I guess in some ways Star Nations would say, what else is new? But they're not just interested in a vacuum here. They want to move ahead, and they have indicated that it's in their interest and in Earth's interest to move to a new understanding, a new agreement. They don't want it, a vacuum, to last very long, and therefore, in the second update I've gotten from the Counselor for the Watchers, that they are now communicating directly with humans in various parts of the Earth in order to get ideas and feedback for what should go into a new agreement. They're going around existing governments because they have determined that all the major governments are pretty heavily infiltrated by cabal types. There aren't very many pure, very large governments out there. So they're going to go directly to the people in a grassroots way and make contact with a huge number of people, get their ideas and input into what they would like to see in an agreement between Star Nations and Earth, and put all that together and then come to a new agreement. And they've indicated that since they do a bit of future viewing, if you will, that they can see where this is headed, that in the future there will be teams formed of humans and star visitors that will deal with various areas, and they gave a couple examples, actually. Teams would be for specific missions and objectives that are determined by the Star Nations and by the unified human race, species, if you will. For example, in the area of medical technology, this joint Star Nations human team would coordinate understanding of technology as shared by members of the Star Nations, and ensure that medical technology advances are distributed fairly so that, you know, the handful of big countries don't get them all, that the medical advances are spread around so that various areas of the world get a chance to develop these and market them, and so that we don't have the situation as we've had in the past where U.S. and U.K. and a couple of the other big players make all the advances and everybody else is shut out. Another example they've given of a joint Star Nations human team is, after this new understanding gets going, is they've heard already from many, many people that they want the healing of Earth to get accelerated. Things are so bad, they want this to be a great high-urgency acceleration item. And the arrangement they have in mind is this, that as humans work to make needed changes to the environment to improve it, Star Nations will assist with energy work of their own. They call it energy stimulation. I don't have a very good human-level explanation for it. But it'll basically be on a matching level. If humans get busy on a certain area, particularly the Zetas, who are some of the real worker force of the Star Nations will contribute energy so that there will be a multiplication of efforts, and the healing of Earth and its environmental systems will accelerate much more rapidly than if humans had to do all the reversing of the damage by themselves.
So we're going to get some help, you're saying?
Yes. That's after this new understanding gets solidified, we're going to see those kinds of joint effort teams. One of their ethical principles is that they can't ride in like the 7th Cavalry and solve all our problems for us. They could, but it wouldn't be right. It's our planet, our culture. We need to take ownership and responsibility of doing it right. On the other hand, we've got serious difficulties and time is running out. And so they see it as ethically possible to operate in a cooperative way with us while still giving us major responsibility, room to take major responsibility in straightening up our society and healing our planet.
Richard, do you see the future of this relationship with them and us as people as getting better and better?
Yes. For a while there, over the last year or two, the discussions that I was getting from council members there was a lot of back and forth about, you know, the teeter-totter. But as more and more people start to make a difference in our society, and I think if you look around carefully and the listeners look around carefully, they'll see that there are people stepping forward to make changes, to speak out against abuses and corruption and bad government and environmental destruction and violence and war and so forth. They've determined that with some help and emphasis and push and communication and encouragement from them, we can turn this thing around in time, that we're not a lost cause. So they did a little future viewing, if you will. You know, military guys aren't the only people that do remote viewing.
All right, so they give you a little glimpse of the future for us?
Yeah, they see these teams deployed and cooperatively working on various areas. We mentioned medical technology advances and environmental improvement, and there's many other areas we could get into. But this is going to be the future. I proposed to them that what we needed is a central repository for information, that a lot of the information that they've shared with us has gotten bottled up by these cabal types, and, you know, it's been classified, and the public can't get at it and benefit from it.
Did they ever describe, Richard, what their craft looks like? I'm curious. You know, with so many different star nations, I mean, are they all the same?
No. They have a great variety of craft. You know, you've seen the disc and the cigar shapes and the triangles and things that look like a top or an ice cream cone, circular, rhomboid, rectangular. They come in an even kind of diffuse energy, which I'm not clear if that's an ambient plasma field or whether the craft itself is kind of diffuse energy, but they come in a huge variety, just as on Earth, not all our airplanes look the same.
What about the propulsion system for all the craft, even though they may look different? Is the propulsion system similar?
Well, I think there are some varieties, because these are different civilizations doing their thing. Anti-gravity is certainly the bottom line, but there are kinds of anti-gravity. There's electrogravitic, magnetogravitic, and then a kind of working with the strong force field and manipulating that Bob Lazar has talked about. And different craft give off different kinds of effects and signatures. Some of them seem to have some magnetic effects on Earth. Some seem to send out electronic signals. Some seem to put out a bit of a heat signature. Some seem to affect the electronics on nearby planes that fly by them and others don't. So, it seems that there's a variety of technologies that work, but the bottom line is they all keep the craft up in the air and it doesn't crash.
Why you, Richard? I mean, have you tried to answer that or resolve that for yourself? Why you, and how did this telepathic message come to you? I mean, did it just come in a dream? Did you get a funny feeling? What happened?
Well, I've been in dialogue with some people in a team that also worked on helping this hearing happen earlier that nailed the cabal for their misdeeds. So I've gotten a combination of telepathic messages from others and my own readings on that come together to put this message together, and I've gotten indications, as I say, from other associates and from Chief Golden Eagle as well. And the why me? I can't say in an absolutist sense. I do know that they've kind of tagged me as the representative for Earth to speak with their counselors, the High Council, if you will.
Well, you have not met them yet, though, have you?
Yes.
Yes, I have
met several of them.
Wait a minute. You're holding back on me now, Richard. When did this happen?
Well, I took a trip and was in their presence. They have not manifested in a physically separate way, but their energy field is there, and they've in some cases used a person to communicate through, use their voice box to communicate through. The thing here is that they said that Earth is about two ticks below the developmental level that they usually have as the minimum level of cultural and social development in a planetary society for them to bother with. We're about two ticks below that. But because there is a unique and kind of intriguing potential in humans, spiritual and even psychic giftedness, potentials, and enough intelligence, that they felt that an exception would be made to the usual, well, pass them by and go on to some other planet that's worth saving that isn't so far gone. And so Earth has not been accepted into the Star Nation's family of inhabited worlds yet, designating a human representative. Myself at the moment, I hear that there are a couple of youngsters, a boy and a girl star kid, that are into their late grade school years and teens, respectively, that are going to be council representatives down the line. But at the moment, I'm the kind of designated hitter for this communication. But Earth is had to be talked to to get this ball rolling of turning things around and give us hope and give us an understanding of what had to happen in the past over 40 years ago to get enough of a path cleared to raise consciousness. We're at a whole different consciousness level on Earth now than we were in 1961. And now we're ready to engage with the Star Nations as visiting cultures. We've had enough of Star Trek and George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and all of these presentations. Everybody's kind of gotten used to the fact that, in fact, some of our scientists now are talking about planets out there that look like they're the right size to harbor life and finding organic molecules in the atmosphere and all the ingredients for life. You know, the public consciousness has been softened up to the fact that the star visitors come out in public now. People aren't going to fall down and worship them as gods. They're not going to have any reason to fear them as invaders. They are going to understand that just as when we send explorers to visit a more primitive Indian tribe up the Amazon, they're still human beings. Cultures differ, but people can recognize basic humanity between each other and come to some understandings, and that when they come out in the open, we'll be able to engage on that level as well with a mutual respect and appreciation of intelligence and spirituality and develop consciousness between both societies.
Do you favor one Star Nation group over another? I mean, is there a one that you really take to your fancy?
You mean favorite race among them?
Yeah.
Well, that would be speaking to personal prejudice. I don't think there's any race that's intrinsically better than any other. They all subscribe to the 11 universal and 11 spiritual laws. I have kind of a special heart place for the praying mantis folks, having dealt with their energy, and in working with the people who've had that, they have a very high, ethereal, spiritual, fine, gentle, warm, loving energy that I particularly cherish. But I could say good things about many of the other races I've heard about or had some contact with, too, so I wouldn't want to play favorites here.
The praying mantis folks. They were the praying mantis type. That was the ones that came off the craft in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Do you remember that scene?
Well,
kind of
those were kind
spindly.
Of Spielberg generics. They may have been an attempt to depict them.
And I'm talking about right in the beginning, not the small ones that came and got the occupants to go aboard.
Yeah, I suppose as much as Hollywood could do a job of it, you might say that. And they captured some of that ethereal kind of glowing, gentle quality. I'll give you that, yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, Richard, it's fascinating stuff. It's bizarre. I've known you for a number of years. This has never happened to you until recently.
No.
Man, what do you tell people who say, Richard, I think we're going to cart you away now? I mean, what do you tell those people, non-believers?
I'm a trained psychologist. I can write better admission orders than you can, but I'm also a scientist, and I have enough independent corroboration. If we're just using the principles of jurisprudence and evidence that you get multiple corroborating sources, don't think that I don't pinch myself and have had questions about, you know, this. But when I get enough corroborating multiple sources, I have to say, well, we got something here. I think the other half of it is going to be over the next several years. People are going to have to wait a little bit, but as they see things start to come out in the open and governments reluctantly admitting, yeah, they're here. Well, we've seen Guy Consolmagno do that for the Vatican in Harper's Monthly, this issue. They're going to see more governments doing that, and as we get an agreement, a new understanding going with the Star Nations, and they feel free and safe to come out in the open and start setting up these human Star Nation teams to take on different project areas and turn Earth around in a good direction, then I think it will speak for itself. Right now, you know, I'm just a person talking, and people make of it whatever they will.
You've got great credentials, Richard. I got to tell you, you are. You're a scientist. It's an incredible story. You're an anthropologist, a PhD, behavioral scientist. I mean, this is amazing stuff. We'll be back in a moment. Next hour, your phone calls with our guest, Dr. Richard Boylan, on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, has this situation helped you or hurt you professionally? You know, behavioral scientist, anthropologist, you've got more titles than I can even announce. I mean, where does that stand for you?
You mean going public with this
Yes.
Star Nation's information.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had a couple of repercussions since I've gotten this information and started putting it out. Very shortly after I got this information, my wife and I went on a little trip, and someone sabotaged one of the rear tires on our truck.
Wow.
So we were tooling along about 75 miles an hour in the interstate down in Southern California, out in the desert, and one tire was empty. Luckily, we had duals on the rear axle, and tire was totally shredded, but the other one held the weight, and we didn't careen off the highway into the side.
My God, Richard, you could have gotten killed if you had a single tire.
Yeah, yeah, definitely could have rolled. Then we've had some other stuff happen, too. That was the most dramatic. And of course, a lot of hate mail from the operatives who work for the cabal and don't want this out and do intimidation stuff. And some of my team colleagues, Frank and Wendy, Marja, you know, have had similar stuff too. They use psychotronics and even kind of psychic outreach. Some of the stuff sounds pretty bizarre, but where a person can sit in one place and send negative energy that shows up somewhere else and disturbs the person, causes them discomfort or pain or all kinds of turbulent feelings, you know, while they're asleep or awake. This stuff's been done to other members of the team, men in black kind of things, intimidation stuff. One person, their place of work has been staked out, and these guys very obviously make themselves known so that she's intimidated, or at least they're trying to get her intimidated. She's a pretty tough gal. You know, we understand that there's this thing has more importance than our personal comfort or even safety. The Earth and the human society literally hangs in the balance, and this word has to get out. And people are making the decisions to take the chances to get it out.
Well, let's go to the phones. So, Richard, everybody's stacking up for you. Let's go to our first wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Hey, Blair. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Boylan,
mm-hmm.
What you're talking about, if you take the premise that this is an experimental planet, you know, whereupon so-called good and evil are placed on what you might call an even playing field, you could put your star people in with Keys of Enoch, Urantia, George Adamski. And what I'm trying to say is these contacts and propositions like this will continue with probably more or less success until, as Buckminster Fuller says, a critical mass of free will, decision-making mortals is reached, and then us Earthlings will indeed move up a level. Don't you agree?
Well, there's certainly the critical mass needs to happen, and I think is happening, and I think the seeding of the star kids and the star seeds among us in such numbers are part of energizing that. I don't want to put the whole effort in their lap because other humans of goodwill are also needed and are making contributions here. It's a matter of consciousness, and once people wake up that this is important and needs to happen and needs to happen now, then we will be at that critical mass, and I would certainly agree that we are right on the edge of an uptick in our social evolution, if you will.
Okay, thank you for that call, Blair. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
This is Mike calling from Auburn, Washington, and I'd like to ask a question of Richard.
Sure thing.
Richard, with these things that you feel or this information that you get. One thing that's always kind of intrigued me is I've heard about all these secret deals done between both the U.S. government and other heads of government of the planet Earth with these other alien races. And one of the things that I would want to do if I was one of these heads of government, for better or for worse, is, you know, the best way to hang on to power is to live longer and live healthier. You hear of these people like reportedly like Dick Cheney and Dwight Eisenhower that supposedly have contact with these aliens, having bad hearts and all that stuff. If I were one of those guys, I would go up to him and say, you know, hey, could you please fix my heart as part of this deal? That's what I would do. Have you ever heard of any kind of deal like that? Or, you know, can you make my relatives live longer and healthier?
I haven't heard any such deal. At that point, Star Nations would not have been doing, you know, individualistic efforts like that. They tend to operate race-wise, you know, with the whole human race's advancement. I know Colonel Donald Blair told me that the reason Lawrence Rockefeller was, and he was in on these meetings and spent a lot of money trying to learn everything he could about the Star Nations, was that he hoped he would get the secret to longevity. Well, he lived to a pretty old age, but he eventually died recently. And the irony is that now that the agreement that he and his brother and some of the others put together has been ruled invalid, and that kind of cabal nonsense has been swept out of the way, there's room for a new agreement, and one of the task forces is going to be to move ahead with medical technology, which I imagine will involve extending human lifespan in a healthy way. I don't know that anybody has gotten a special deal out of this on an individual basis. I think what's happening to some of the individuals you've mentioned is karma coming home to roost, but no special deals that I've been informed of.
I see. Have you heard of any kind of specific health-related issues or any kind of health-related help that's actually been passed down that we know of that may be disguised as a medical advancement or something like that that might have been might have come, say, you know, why did polio disappear? Why have certain diseases disappeared? Could this possibly have something to do with these alien races, or did they just kind of die out on their own?
Well, I know that the star races have, on their own, volunteered huge amounts of information in areas that the cabal have not been able to turn to weapons, things like advances in medicine and communications and electronics and certainly astronomy, cellular biology, and so forth. And I, without being able to point to any specific advance that human scientists have announced, it's pretty clear that this seeding of information and its filtering up from government scientists to spread out into the broader human community has happened, and we've had breathtaking advances in science and technology, just to mention two areas, over the last 50 years, more than we have in the last 500, perhaps last 5,000. And we will see more of this.
Of all these species, Richard, the Zetas seem to be the most benevolent. Is that a pretty good assumption?
Well, I wouldn't say the most benevolent. All the Star Nations are well-intentioned. The Zetas are the most frequently encountered because they're here doing the most work. And you know, with the genetic upgrading and a lot of the communications work, frankly, they're some of the heroes of the Star Nations. They're coming in under a heavy fire situation and taking great risks to make all these contacts. And they're the one people see the most often. They're certainly loving and well-intentioned beings. So are the reptoids, so are the praying mantis, so are the humanoids and others out there. So I can't say that, you know, I would pick favorites in that. They're all here on a kind of, what shall we say, a Peace Corps kind of mission to Earth, and take pride and a sense of spiritual advancement and honorable duty in doing so.
Do they believe in God? They ever say that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. They put it more in terms of source, supreme source, if you will. But that's, you know, a way of conceptualizing God, but very much so, and that's the basis of the what these 11 universal laws and 11 spiritual laws are grounded in, is part of the truth that source and its unfolding in all of creation. That's the way things are organized, principles of free will and freedom of man, and laws of movement and balance of choice and light and karma, and all of these are just attributes of the consciousness of God, if you will, manifesting in the universe in which we find ourselves.
East of the Rockies. Hello to you.
Hi, George. How you doing tonight?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Dr. Boylan, how are you?
Good evening.
I've got a few questions for you here. You stated several times of these people being here on a mission and having an agenda. Other than their helping us with our medical fields or our earth care, what is their true mission? If they've got 59% of our population as extraterrestrial beings, sounds to me like they're trying to take over.
Well, I already indicated what their true mission is. The 59% are not extraterrestrial beings. They are humans. All of us have will go through many reincarnations over our course as a consciousness personality from time to time, life to life, and in many cases from planet to planet. And but when a person's in a given incarnation, they are that species of that planet. And when a person incarnates on Earth, they are a human, regardless of their previous history of incarnations elsewhere or not. And the same with the star kids, star seeds. They have some few proportionately extraterrestrial genetics to upgrade consciousness and abilities, but the basic genome is human. It has not been transmogrified into something else. I also think we need to put this whole question into a much larger and accurate perspective in terms of the origin of the human race. Every single person on Earth is a hybrid two times over before the modern era of star nations contact. By that I mean the entire human race was bioengineered from primate stock around 325,000 years ago. Homo sapiens emerging with no immediate precursor, one of the mysteries of anthropology, until you recognize the star nation intervention. And then after giving that about 125,000 years of seeing how it worked out, humans were still too aggressive and territorial, and so they did a genetic upgrade to Homo sapiens, sapiens, modern human. And now in the last several decades, they decided a bit more upgrading is needed so that we don't blow ourselves up, and now we have Homo teres spatialis, or starseed, but still human.
Okay, Joe, you there?
Yes.
Okay, any more follow-up?
Well, it just puzzles me that if they don't have a mission or an agenda to take over, then then why don't they go to a large, like a CNN or some kind of conglomerate that controls the airways and just present themselves to the world? And instead of just to one human that they know is going to get ridiculed and questioned and drug over the coals, why don't they show themselves?
Well, they're not here to do a cultural meltdown on people's consciousness. There's been a gradual preparation of people for this. I'm not the only person who's been contacted. There have been millions of people all over the earth. I would say tens and probably more accurately hundreds of millions of people who have been contacted by the visitors in either direct physical contacts or out-of-body contacts when the person's consciousness goes somewhere and has an encounter. And people have been communicated with. They've been told some of the messages I've indicated. They've been shown scenes of the future as kind of warnings of what will happen to Earth. We don't change our ways and turn things around. The fact that the UFO cover-up has kept the lid on this in the general media, except for, you know, wonderful places like George Noory's show and some of the UFO magazines, the things where the stuff leaks out, doesn't make it any less real. The hundreds of millions of people that have been contacted, there's a general consensus of what communications they get, and it is about what I've been talking about in terms of why they're here and what we need to do to change and how Earth's in peril and how we could have a very wonderful future if we get our act together. So I'm not just Paul Revere here yelling the redcoats are coming, and people have to believe or not. They need to pull their neighbors out of the closet. There are so many people out there who are just quietly sitting on the information that they've had a contact, they've seen a UFO up close, or one of their relatives has. If everybody came out of the closet, the UFO cover-up would be over tomorrow.
Stay with us. We'll be back with Dr. Richard Boylan and your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. If you'd like to reach his website, there are two related websites. They are linked at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast with our final segment with Dr. Richard Boylan. Richard, what's next on your plate these days, by the way?
Well, I'm kind of in this area. So much has happened in the last several weeks that I'm kind of holding myself mentally open for further developments. I expect as the Star Nations collate all the human input that they're getting from people around the world, that they don't have the basic ingredients for a new understanding. And I imagine at some point there'll be a putting out of information about that. I don't have any foreguess of what that will be at this point, but kind of standing by for that. I know it will happen. And then as the new understanding comes into place and into effect, it's going to have some implications. We talked about the joint teams that would get set up. I got to think that this is going to change some of the political homeostasis of human society currently, because in a sense both the Star Nations and the grassroots humans are going around these corrupt governments and taking care of business despite them, and this is going to have some very interesting implications for people that are used to having governments say how it's going to be and going to find themselves undercut by this process. There's also, of course, the Star Kid and Starseed mission I'm on of continue to do talks and Star Kids, Star Seed workshops and gatherings of people to kind of explain this phenomenon, wake people up to their true inner nature, many star kids, star seeds kind of half suspect they're different but don't have the whole story, so we try and go around and lay it all out so they can come to understand themselves. By the way, if any of your listeners are suspecting they may be such, I have a very handy online questionnaire that they can take and kind of score themselves and find out if they are a star seed or star kid. It's the Star Kid Star Seed Identification Questionnaire.
I did that
from
your website, and I think I may be one. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah, well, you know, the score is, number is just very straightforward. If you cross the threshold number, then you are. Also have a very interesting other aspect on there, too. One of the aspects of star kids and star seeds is the bioelectromagnetic field that extends around the bodies of all living things and humans.
Sure.
Is much farther out for star kids and star seeds than it is for the old standard human. In the old standard human, the field extends out about a foot, maybe a few inches more. But in star seeds, star kids, it extends out several yards. And if you use some dowsing rods and step away from the person some yards out and come at them with a pair of dowsing rods pointed horizontal and parallel, pointed towards the person, they will splay out to right angle when they reach the edge of the person's field. You can just see that for yourself. And it's very clear that this stuff is real for people who like science because, you know, what is that that's moving steel sideways in apparent thin air? It's the person's bioelectric field. And the fact that for star seeds, star kids, this field extends out yards more than it does for a standard human makes it very clear that this is one of the areas in which you can actually feel and see for yourself and measure the difference in the, let's say, the energetic makeup of the star seeds. Kids and star seeds versus the old regular human.
Let's go to the phones. Here we go. International line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Is this me?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Yeah. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah. Good. I'm a member of the Star Kids Hangout actually, and so I've been following Dr. Boylan's work and just interested in the whole thing and loving it, you know, for years. Anyways, I'd like to ask a quick question. What would you say would be the best way for, you know, star kids with their abilities and their missions and everything to keep faith throughout times where, you know, everything around them is against what they're going for. You know what I mean? Like, with, let's say you live in a family where everybody's like the cabal, you know, I mean, what would you say would be the best way to, again, keep the faith and just keep your, you know, the purity of mission, I would say. What would you think?
Very good question. Glad you called in. I think people need to hear from Star Kids and see that you guys are real. You don't have green horns. You ask intelligent questions, and you've got real social and emotional concerns. This is real society we're all living in, and it's not easy for those that are put together a little bit differently to find acceptance and understanding. Just because you're a Star Kid doesn't mean that your parents are guaranteed to be aware of this phenomenon, and while some star kids have the fortunate circumstance of their parents have been contacted and know about it and understand what's going on and encourage their child, others operate in a family environment where the parents are unaware, maybe even hostile to the suggestion that UFOs are real or star visitors are contacting Earth. One of the things you're doing already right is, of course, contacting other star kids and in the Star Kids Hangout online group. There's a chance to talk with other star kids, find out you're not the only one and compare notes and compare experiences. I would also encourage you to look around in your local society, if you're still in school, your schoolmates, or if you're on a job, your job mates, neighbors, look for people who are showing some signs of being star kids or star seeds, you know, the high intelligence, some psychic abilities. You might even make yourself a little pair of dowsing rods, and when they're not looking, douse their field and stepping away from a little bit and seeing if they are. And starting to gently raise the question of, gee, there's more people coming out these days talking about abilities that we used to think were very strange. You know, like Alison Dubois on the Medium show on television. And many programs now are featuring people with what used to be called paranormal abilities, but they're getting to be more and more normal. And kind of raising the bar gradually of, gee, there seem to be a lot more people like that. And, gee, it's happening too fast to just be evolution. And why do you think, where does that come from? What do you think the explanation for that is? And a person doesn't say, you might say, well, I've heard from various sources that, you know, some of the star people are contacting folks, and the results of this contact when they leave are these people functioning at a little higher level, and see what people do with that if they don't, you know, look at you too strangely and say, you'd be surprised. And a lot of people say, well, go on. You know, I've always kind of wondered about this, and then you've got an opening, and maybe make a new friend and maybe help somebody come out of the closet, too, that you can have as company, so you're not feeling quite so isolated.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question, too. How did you know you were a star child?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually was listening to the show when Dr. Boylan was on over this, it was past July, actually, and heard just the signs of a star kid and just realized, wow, you know, I'm, like, matching a few of those, and took the test and scored, like, 30 or something out of I don't know how many. And anyways, yeah, I realized and emailed Dr. Boylan after that. And but, yeah, it was just the general stuff, like the electric field is definitely a thing. And let's see what else. Just psychic abilities, like, you know, I thought they were sort of visions or imaginations, but of sort of alien contact. And then I started getting sort of realizations and actual good philosophy and information from them. And so, you know, stuff like that I just connected with immediately when I heard of Dr. Boylan on the show. So, yeah, it was very cool.
Okay, great. Appreciate you being on the program.
Yeah,
and like you said, Richard, there are many of them out there, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, if the gentleman's still listening, our young star kid, one more thing. If you're walking along and you see somebody ahead of you go under one of those orange sodium vapor streetlights and it goes out, bingo, you got one.
Really? Because that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah. There are a lot of star seeds out there.
I would at least say 59% of them.
Voila. So, that's one way a person can kind of decloset himself without even meaning to.
East of the Rockies.
So watch for that, and bingo, you've got another one.
You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Take it away.
Yes, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
Good. I have a couple quick questions for you. One, I was wondering, he was indicating that he was getting some advisory stuff from Golden Eagle, and I was under the impression that a lot of the Native American groups use chemicals as a form of enhancement to achieve that inner type of awareness. Some of them use peyote and others use other things. One question I had was, is he used some sort of chemical enhancement to achieve that? I'm speaking strictly from an open-minded point of view.
Okay.
Second, another question was, what would happen, in his opinion, if the Star Council was adhering to, say, something of the consequence of one of your guests the other night that called for a 90% reduction in the human's population to make it so the Earth actually survived, and how that would actually go over, should that be some bad news. And three, wondering exactly how the groups, the world's organized religions, being that most of them are very fanatical, how he thinks that they would react to any forthcoming you know, such a dramatic, you know, revelation as this information would be.
Okay, we can take the first one first, and that is any mood-altering drugs or anything in order to get this telepathy from them?
No, that would be really verboten for the Lakota and Dakota Sioux spiritual traditions. what the gentleman's referring to is the Native American Church, which, of course, is a form of spirituality more often found among some of the southern tribes in the United States, the southern, southwest desert tribes, but and somewhat else there. But no, Golden Eagle does not use any chemical altering, not even alcohol. And his getting of information, coming in contact with Star Nations is during sacred ceremonies, sweat lodge, and fasting and vision questing on in a remote place, and other sacred calling in ceremonies.
Richard, a professor out of Texas wanted is calling for the elimination of 90% of the world's population in order to keep this planet alive and going. I think the caller wanted to know what you think the reaction would have been from some of these members of the Star Nations.
Yes. They're not in favor of genocide, to put it mildly, and that's what it would take to get rid of 90% of the world's population.
I agree, yeah.
What we need is a combination of environmental repair and social justice. We find out, you know, a lot of the world's population problems are caused by high reproduction rates, which are caused by poverty. Once people become affluent, they tend to have reproduction rates that are pretty close to just replacing the existing adult population. You know, two people have two kids, or even slightly less in some cases. So when we get social justice going and fairness of resources distributed across societies rather than the haves and the have-nots, we will go far towards solving the population pressure on the Earth, and then environmental restoration will help. When the Star Visitor Zero Point Energy technology can be shared without the big oil people repressing it, we can get to a world where energy needs are met without any petroleum, no global warming, no pollution. Peoples can operate in an environment with much less environmental impact than now. The professor is doing his hand wringing because of the way we're doing it now, with as many people as we got and as polluting a society as we're operating in. Yes, it is putting too much pressure on Earth, but we don't have to do genocide. There are other ways to bring things into balance that fit justice and environmental sensitivity and clean energy.
Wildcard, we've got a quick moment for you. Hi there.
Hi, this is Larice in Fort Worth, listening on KLIF.
Sure. Hi, Larice.
And I want to know if Dr. Boylan knows of Sheldon Neidel. He has a planetary activation organization, and he puts regular updates from the Star Nations on the internet that, you know, some of us have been reading for 4 or 5 years, and they say a lot of the same stuff, even to the point where they use the same terminology.
Well, I do not know. Do you know him?
I've heard him speak at conferences. I personally am underwhelmed by Sheldon Neidel. I found him to be a very nimble picker up of things that others have put out, and lo and behold, it soon shows up on his website, etc., or in his talks. But I'm not here to throw rocks at people. I will just leave it at I find myself underwhelmed at that, and wouldn't personally count it among the sources that I would pay a lot of attention to.
Okay, Richard, we are rapidly running out of time, and I want to thank you for being on the program. And I got to tell you, it is absolutely stunning and fascinating. Had I not known you over the years and your credentials, I'd say, oh, let's listen to this. But this is very strange and unusual. And I got to believe when this information came to you, you were pretty perplexed as well, weren't you?
Absolutely. It's only by the corroboration over time and putting it to tests and and seeing the corroboration from other sources that I've come to really get settled within it myself, because, you know, it's a total revision of what we understand about recent history, and but it makes wonderful sense, and a lot of pieces fall into place once you put this piece in the middle of the puzzle.
Absolutely. Richard, again, thank you for being on Coast to Coast.
George,
appreciate
you're a wonderful host, as always. It's my pleasure.
All right, you go get some sleep. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Dell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. We've got a stunning series of programs for you this week. Until then, be safe, everyone.